The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
As of 2015, there were over 300,000 hotel rooms in Malaysia. And according to a recent estimate, more than half of them are unoccupied. Is that down to just lackluster demand, or does the blame lie with the likes of Airbnb? I'm Tan Chung Han, and today I'm speaking to Ricky Ang, CEO of Swiss Garden International. Good morning, Ricky, and welcome to the Breakfast Grill.
Good morning, Han. Thank you very much for having me here.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
A very good morning to all BFM listeners everywhere, too.
So, Ricky, set the stage for us real quick then. You know, what's the profile for Swiss Garden International?
We are a hotel management company. Swiss Garden International was founded back in the early 90s when we launched our first hotel in Kuala Lumpur. We have since grown to having 11 hotels in our stable with pretty much hospitality products that covers the entire gamut of the hospitality range. We have city hotels. We have beach resorts, beach-fronting resorts. We have affordable inns. We also operate service residences. Plus, we also have an 18-hole golf course in Lumut in front of the beach to boot.
Now, Malaysia is expected to welcome about 32 million tourists this year. What's your pitch then? I'll let you start with this. Now, how do you attract as many of them to your hotels as possible?
I think first and foremost, having the product types, the diversity of products will generally appeal to various different segments of the market. So as I mentioned, even in Kuala Lumpur itself, we have four types of different products. We have our inn in the Chinatown. We have a city center business class hotel, which will also take tourists as well. We have residence apartments for those that need a little bit more space and those that are traveling with families. So having the right products being available will actually, you know, poise ourselves to cater to this increased demand.
If you look at the premium segment of the market, now how do you then position Swiss Garden's brand versus some of the bigger boys? Or is it just down to price?
Well, no, it's not just down to price. I think there are certain expectations when someone chooses to come into a Swiss Garden or as opposed to Brand X. And you know, there are other facets as well over and above the brand. But where we in Swiss Garden pride ourselves to being different is that our focus generally is into the efficient provision of services. You know, if you talk to generally to hoteliers, I think there is an overemphasis whenever we talk about service in that everybody starts to think that, oh, service is about how you greet a person, how you remember a guest by name. I think that's great. That's fantastic. But the actual efficiency in providing the services is a little bit more critical than that. For example, you know, if I walk into a breakfast room, I want my coffee to be served promptly. You know, and I want it to be served with an option of sugar and milk and things like that. I don't want to have to flag three different waiters to actually bring me milk, sugar, and then coffee. And at the same time, it would be great to say hello, good morning to our guests. But we don't want to be, or I as a guest don't want to be sitting down having to strike conversations with the captain of a restaurant for three straight consecutive days in a week, you know. Perhaps is a bit much.
I mean, real quick, I'm sure many hotel operators also promise efficient service, right? I mean, is that really tangible though? Because I'm sure Brand X will also say the same thing. They're not going to go and say, "Oh, we offer less efficient service than Swiss Garden International."
Certainly not. I don't think any brand will actually say anything negative about themselves. And I do understand, and I do recognize that most brands will say that they offer the best services and things like that. The tangible aspect, I guess, would be right down to how the customers actually feel after they experience the product. Sometimes, you know, to be fair, if you are the first-time visitor into a particular country or a particular area, you may not know the various distinction between the brands unless you have actually sampled it.
So according to the Malaysian Association of Hotels, occupancy rates are at about 35 to 40%. So that's more than half of those 300,000 rooms across Malaysia that are without guests. Are you seeing similar numbers for your hotels?
Actually, no. Our numbers are pretty much in line with the rest of the country. For example, in 2016, I think most of the country was hovering around 60% and 60+%. I don't know where the numbers of 30 to 40% came from.
Malaysian Association of Hotels, apparently.
It could be referring to just a certain pocket dates in a week, or it could be just one peculiar instance. There are naturally fluctuations in occupancy, but on an average, I think hotels are doing about 60+%.
So there could be a seasonal factor to all of this.
Oh, definitely. Right? Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Apparently, according to media reports, you've got three hotels up for sale, namely the Swiss Garden Beach Resort Kuantan, Swiss in Johor Bahru, and Swiss in Sungai Petani. Why the sale?
Okay, coming back to what I was saying just now, we are a hotel management company. We don't necessarily have to be asset owners. The asset holders may plan to divest the actual asset, but insofar as the management company goes, we are still in the game, and in fact, we are looking at going into an asset light, but very, very heavy into acquisition of management contracts. That's how we foresee our growth to be.
Nevertheless, you still initially acquired those assets, right? Swiss in Johor Bahru, Swiss in Sungai Petani, Swiss Garden Beach Resort Kuantan. So why?
Those were assets in our portfolio, yes.
Right, so why the initial acquisition only to then just farm it off? I mean, if you say your strategy is to be asset light anyways, so why even bother with those three?
Why did we acquire them in the first place? Mm. It was in the portfolio already, and it was already owned. The direction to go into an asset light management service environment is a fairly recent one that we have decided to embark on.
I mean, is that due to expected challenges, headwinds in the hotel industry?
Actually, that's very much due to the opportunities out there.
To unlock value from your assets, you mean?
Yes, and also to look at a trajectory of growth from actually the acquisition of new management contracts. Right. That's how the management company wants to go.
But that's interesting because let's focus in on Swiss in Johor Bahru because you just opened that last year, January 2016, but you're looking to flip it so soon. So what happened between January 2016 till now?
I think the intent to divest was already there even before we actually started operating the property.
The Johor Bahru one?
Yes. So it has nothing, the results or the performance, and is actually now picking up very well, has absolutely nothing to do with the decision to divest the asset.
Now, all three, if they are successfully sold, they're expected to fetch a price tag of about 200 million ringgit. What's the plan for all that moolah?
That goes back to the holding company. And I guess some of it will be reinvested into refurbishment and updating of the physical products or some of the existing assets.
What's your outlook for your industry?
I believe that the outlook of the industry is going to be rather positive over the next coming 5 years. In the past, if you look at what happened between 2012 to 2015, there was an increase of about 55% in terms of rooms inventory coming into the market. That obviously created a lot of pressures and stress in terms of the lack of demand with a slightly oversupply situation. I think that's been curbed. That's not going to happen anymore to that degree. So the cycle of a return of tourist traffic is also going to improve with that. So I think the outlook is that it's going to climb out from what it has been in the last 3 years.
Now let's get an update on your portfolio here. You know, what happened to your Gurney Resort Hotel and Residences and also the Northern All Suites, both in Penang? You took control of them in 2012, but they are no longer featured on your website. What happened there?
We were the managers for a little bit over a year. And then the asset owners divested and sold the hotels. That's a prime example of what a management company does. We actually manage the asset for asset owners, and In this particular instance, the asset owners decided to divest and sold off the properties.
And that's what I wanted to focus on, because then why do you expose yourself? Because you already own these properties, right? I mean, I'm going back to the three that you're putting up for sale right now. Mm. You already own those properties and you saw what happened with your Penang properties. So why expose yourself to those same risks?
Well, it depends on whether you look at it from a perspective of being a hotel owner or you look at it from a perspective of having a management company whose source of business and income is derived managing. From managing for other people.
Sure, but then how do you plan for like the medium or long term then, or if what happened to you in Penang?
Well, in the medium and long term, what our vision actually is to go out there and acquire as many management contracts as we can. And in so doing, we actually proliferate the brand. Brand equity grows, you've got more properties carrying the Swiss Garden brand, but you don't necessarily have to own the asset.
So then let's try and reconcile this recent pivot to some expansion plans that you've spoken about or the company has spoken about back in 2011. 6 years ago, there were talks to open hotels in Butterworth, Penang, Cameron Highlands, Sungai Johor, KK, and Kuantan Pahang. And from that list, only Kuantan was the one that where you were able to successfully, you know, roll out a hotel there. So are those plans then still on track, or it's now just a case of, like you just said, getting as many management contracts?
I can't speak for what was spoken about back in 2011, except that I think there were changes in the marketplace, and therefore
changes being that oversupply you talked about.
Yeah, changes being the market conditions actually changed, and there were you know, obviously like in all plans, there were slight shifts in plans, and I think when we mentioned that back then, it was very much in line with what our development arm was doing in terms of developing these areas, and not directly looking at just simple third-party acquisition of contracts. Today, it's slightly different game. We are looking at third-party owners and we're looking at, you know, acquisition of management contracts in that front. And yes, we do have plans. I can't divulge exact details, but we have we are looking into plans to put our brand up in places like Langkawi, Penang, Johor Bahru, even in existing areas like Malacca already.
As hotel managers?
As hotel managers, as putting up our brand.
All right, now in just a few minutes, we'll focus on how you deal with external challenges, be it via your foreign expansion plans and also, you know, how you deal with factors that are influencing your industry. I'm Tan Chung Han, speaking to Ricky Ang, CEO of Swiss Garden International.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us on BFM 89.9. I'm Tan Chung Han. And with me in the studio is Ricky Ang, CEO of Swiss Garden International. Now, Ricky, in the first half, we spoke about your expansion plans and your strategy for the domestic market. Let's look abroad then. In recent years, there was talk by Swiss Garden International to expand into markets like Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand. But now, as it stands, you've just got that one right outside of Sydney's CBD. What's going on with your expansion plans overseas?
Insofar as us being a hotel management company, we are always, always open to expand beyond the shores of Malaysia. Okay, and as strictly management providers and brand providers to asset owners. So we haven't jettisoned plans to look in opportunities in this area. Suffice to say, however, right at this point in time, there are opportunities within Malaysia itself, and we are, of course, looking at that as our priority.
So the priority is domestic, the Malaysian market?
It's still the Malaysian market.
Okay.
We will not say no to opportunities that come along in the right place, with the right numbers, with the right property.
But are you actively looking, that's the question, overseas?
Well, I'll say we are semi-actively looking.
All right. Let's try this loaded question for size then. Speaking about external challenges, are you a fan of Airbnb?
I guess, you know, I think there are fans of Airbnb. I personally am a fan of hotel, and not just because I work in a hotel. I feel that whenever I travel, wherever I stay, I would like to look for the basic sense of safety, security, comfort and convenience that a hotel would provide. And sometimes perhaps even with a touch of prestige as well.
But then there are some estimates that say about 5 to 15% of our hotels business here in Malaysia is being diverted to Airbnb. So, I mean, is it safe to assume that that figure is set to rise moving forward?
It depends. It depends on how that business is going to be regulated in this country. I mean, as you and I probably know, in Singapore last February, there was a legislation done about Airbnb or rather home sharing platforms. And the penalty of doing that is to the tune of some 200,000 Singapore dollars. You know, in Barcelona, you have fines up to 600 euros. And Berlin, London, New York, all these cities have regulations and rules to manage, control and curb this.
But should Airbnb be regulated? Because when I take it from the customer's point of view, they are offering a service. I'm willing to take on that risk at that price point. You know, willing buyer, willing seller, done deal. Why have that element of government interference?
Well, I think all businesses will need to have certain regulations. And that essentially will ultimately reflect the fact that we are all looking after consumers' interests. You know, and yes, there is a market for it. There is a demand for it. But, you know, honestly speaking, there's also demand for the world's oldest profession. That doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it legal, right? The hotels, our industry, we pay a lot of, we are so regulated. We have to apply for a lot of permits. We have to apply for a lot of licenses. We have to go through grueling checks to renew these licenses. And you know, if all these are really, really, really heaped on us, on the industry, why aren't the likes of Airbnb equally regulated?
So would you then adjust that call to say that perhaps less regulation on existing traditional hotel operators would be the key to this in order to make you more competitive with Airbnb as opposed to regulating Airbnb?
No. I don't think so at all. I think...
So you're comfortable with the level of regulation?
Oh, yeah. I think the regulation is good. The regulation is absolutely necessary.
Okay.
It keeps everybody secured and safe. And it's the right thing to do. So I think it's not a case of less regulations for the hotels, but basically more regulations on platforms like Airbnb.
Now, critics would then argue then that traditional hotel operators are just too slow to adapt. What do you say to that?
I don't think it is a case of being too slow to adapt. I don't think there's been any change. I don't think that the market has shifted so radically that more people want to stay in the likes of Airbnb or in someone else's home as opposed to staying in a hotel. As I mentioned earlier on, you know, there's a huge, huge market out there that would still like to have the basic comfort, safety, security, and convenience that a hotel would provide. You know, granted, and you have all that and you have services at the touch of your fingertips. You don't get that in somebody else's flat, you know. You simply don't. But there are markets for that. And, you know, good luck to all these. But I think there's a very, very, very strong market for also hotel and official hotel hospitality services.
Now, also in April this year, the Malaysian government has introduced the tourism tax. Real quick, what's your overall take on this?
Let me try to answer that with an analogy of, say, you and I walking into a shopping mall and we decide to buy a pair of shoes. So we go to the counter, we pay. We pay for the listed price, we pay for the GST. And then we also have to pay for what would probably be called a shopping mall tax. Now, if that sits well with you, then I guess there's nothing wrong with the tourism tax. But I don't think, to be perfectly honest, you know, not to be cute about it, but I don't think that it is pretty palatable to general consumers.
Oh, you don't think it is?
I don't think it is. Oh. I don't think it is palatable to have to pay a tourism tax.
You know? I'm
already coming into your country. If I'm a tourist, I'm coming into your country. I'm spending money in your country. You know, I'm already paying hotel bills. I'm obviously going to pay food bills, and I'm going to pay shopping bills and things like that. Why do you have to charge me a tax for using hotels over and above this? And then again, if you're going to charge me this type of taxes, how are we going to charge those unregulated accommodation services like Airbnb? Again, it comes back to the equation of, you know, being so heavily regulated on one hand and not having regulation totally on the other hand.
Booking sites like Agoda, you know, how do you manage those various participants?
Oh, I think those are channels that's actually providing very good services. I'm actually a little bit of a radical when it comes to being a hotelier, being that I embrace this OTAs, as it's known in the business.
And that's online travel agencies?
Online travel agencies. I think they are basically doing a very good job by providing platforms for general consumers to actually choose hotels. I have no issues with that, and I work very closely with them, and I would and I think every other hotel companies as well would be working very closely with the likes of Agoda and Booking.com.
So you're okay with parting with some of your profits in order to get the kind of traffic that they generate then, right?
Well, there is always a distribution cost in anything. Okay, whether it is a traditional travel agency that you pay commissions to, or it's an online platform like Agoda, it's still the same type of booking cost. But actually what it does is that it creates a closer and faster reach for you to the consumers directly.
How do you battle bad reviews online? Because I'm thinking all it takes is just one, you know, for it to really influence potential customers, right? How do you fend that challenge off?
Well, first and foremost, I would say that we take reviews online or opinion sharing sites, like for instance, TripAdvisor, very seriously. We would address the comments that's written in there. We also, more importantly, do a closed-door session with our management team to really address and see how we can actually make improvements and ensure that such negative comments don't happen again. But then there is a very, very big but to readers of these comments, to travelers at large. I think they should really, really take everything in its proper context. You know, I mean, there is this tendency or bias that people will write when they are extremely frustrated more than people who are having, you know, great services. And the percentage of the number of comments that actually come out for any given hotel is really less than 2%. So, you know, if you take it in proper context, you need to know that by the vast majority, most people are happy with, you know, staying in hotels.
Real quick, are you getting a boost from the weaker ringgit?
In terms of seeing
more foreign
increase
guests,
of yeah. domestic tourism, yes. Because perhaps the domestic travelers will not want to spend or go overseas where the ringgit is weak. In terms of influx of foreign tourists, not really. Not that much. Not that significant. And that's probably because Malaysia as a destination has always been fairly on the low end of the price spectrum. And, you know, dropping price further or making it more economical, it's not really going to help.
Because we're cheap anyways, or cheaper
anyway,
anyways.
Yes.
Right? So how do you think 2017 will pan out?
I think 2017 is going to be a much improved year compared to 2016. For a fact, our Johor property is more matured now and it's actually bringing in solid numbers. We see improvements in all our resorts, both in Kuantan and Damai Laut. And like I said, that could be due to more domestic travellers. I think the picture is more optimistic this year.
Well, we certainly wish you all the best there. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. I've been speaking to Ricky Ang, CEO of Swiss Garden International. I'm Tan Chung Han, and this is BFM 89.9.
Thank you very much.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile. Your passion drives our unlimited ideas.